is Nation Radio with Alan Mitchell, a.k.a. Low Tide.
Only on Edmonton Sports Radio.
Team 1260.
Welcome back to Hour 2 of Nation Radio. We focus on Oilers' past, present, and future, plus the NHL's biggest stories every week. Of course, we're really focusing on the deadline this weekend because it's coming up on Monday. We've got a big show here on Team 1260 all day long. The morning show going to be at Shanks, and all day we'll be talking about the National Hockey League and the trade deadline, and hopefully a few things about the Edmonton Oilers. There's 10 questions I'd like to have answered by, say, Monday afternoon, and here they are. Was Martin Gerber brought up to be traded? Seriously, now think about that. There's a chance that he would be traded. He comes up. He's a very inexpensive item. Will Jeff Petrie be called up Monday if Vandermeer or one of the NHL defensemen is dealt? And will Alex Plante be called up if they deal two of them? That's an interesting question. Plante hasn't been up so far this year. Sean Bell didn't dress last night, so it might have been that he was out of the rotation. But there's a possibility that that Alex Plante won't be recalled this year, and then for his cup of coffee and to have a look. And that implies that he may have moved down the depth chart. It's just a subtle item. But next question I have, is this the best crop of Oiler rookies since the boys on the bus era? Seriously, we're talking Hall, Eberle, Pajärvi, Omark up front, Petrie on the blue line, and Devin Dubnyk in goal. That's a lot of talent for 1 year. And number five, in an effort to pump Taylor Hall's Calder Trophy chances, will Tom Rennie do the right thing and put Hall and Hemsky together on the power play? Jason Greger has been talking about this on his show and on Oilers Nation as well over the last little while. And it's interesting that when they do play together, especially a week ago on Saturday on the third period, Hall scored three power play goals. I think two of them were playing alongside Hemsky, and that was an outstanding play, the top shelf goal. And I think that if Hall is going to be a serious contender for the Calder Trophy, which is one of the few things the Oilers have to play for this year, that Hemsky and Hall on the power play is a really good idea. And then with regard to Hall, whatever happened to him at center, he wasn't that bad. There was a situation early on with Hall that, you know, he was losing some face-offs and he struggled a little bit with coverage, but I think it might be something they want to look at during the last 20 games or so. How much of the Oilers' face-off problem belongs to the wingers? That's something we can discuss. Is this the year we get a center to win a face-off, either at the deadline or during the summer? And how many trade offers is Steve Tambellini getting for J.F. Jacques at the deadline? I kid. And number 10 question, if the Timrå club in the Swedish Elite League misses the playoffs or is dismissed early, would the Oilers consider playing Anton Lander in Oklahoma City? And if he plays well, would they consider bringing him up for a cup of coffee before the end of the season? You know, he has not had a great second half so far. Might be a situation where he's looking at playing at Timrå for one more year. That's Anton Lander. So lots to talk about, and we invite your emails, nationradioteam1260.com. On the line with us now is Ian Walker from the Vancouver Sun. Ian, welcome.
Hey, I've got to apologize. I was in the bad part of the rink, and I should have known better, but thanks for taking my call.
You know, no worries. I did a really nice live a cappella Black Dog by Zeppelin, and everybody, the audience, is really happy.
So, well, you know what? It's funny because my one of the questions I answered for my my major paper in English was I wrote all the lyrics to Stairway to Heaven, and I ended up getting a B out of it. So it shows you how much the teachers looked at it.
You know what? Those were the good old days, right? Where you're like the 30th kid, whatever, he did something, let's give him an A.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, before the internet and all this other stuff and teachers, helpers, and assistants. So, yeah.
That's one thing I never tell my kids is how I got through grade 10, 11, 12 English. I never talked to them about it. I just.
Well, you know what? I think the greatest thing that university taught me was you know, how to avoid taking the longest route to get somewhere.
Well, there you go. Ian, do the Canucks need anything at the deadline?
You know, I'd be remiss if I didn't say that. I'm sure they'd love to get a fourth line center who can play, who can hit, who can win faceoffs, and who has the ability to skate with this team. But whether or not they're going to get it is another question. Outside that, I don't see very much happening with the Canucks at all.
Mason Raymond is off the pace of last season. Is he a guy who could go if they wanted to get a little bigger, tougher, or have somebody who's having a better year?
I think this team has invested in Mason for so long and seen what Mason's capable of. I think a lot of things, you know, something that's, I think, maybe forgotten is the way that Ryan Kessler is playing this year. And I spoke to Mason of last week about this, and Mason almost has to relearn how to play with Ryan because Ryan's keeping the puck so much more, and he's doing the things that he's doing. So I think Mason realizes that he has to change his game because definitely Ryan Kesler has turned himself into an elite player in this league.
He absolutely has. He's a joy to watch. The most fun I've had watching him was when he was playing for the other side in Vancouver at the Olympics. That was a blast.
And I think you really got to see the intensity and the competitiveness of this guy. I mean, this is a guy who plays in Vancouver who was saying that he hates Canada. You know, and I think he endeared himself at the time. He was the most hated man in the city, if not the country. But that was really a turning point for him, and really showed what he was capable of. And getting back to Mason, I think it's something where Mason now has to make that next jump. And I don't see the Canucks giving up on him quite yet, because of the potential that he does have.
How do Canucks fans feel about having two really good goaltenders? Luongo is obviously the starter, but Schneider is a guy. If I'm Vancouver, I never think about trading him.
Yeah, he's got one more year in his contract at $900,000. There is, if there's one question mark about Luongo, it's him in the playoffs. He's had some inconsistency there. So I can't see them getting rid of someone like him this season. Not with what the team they've built, Corey has come in. I was doing some numbers the other day, and he's come in five times this season after Roberto Luongo lost and got the win for this team. He's also, got 11 wins and three losses in regulation, and is really, the guys have a lot of confidence with him, and I can't see any sort of, I think it would be foolish, and I think Mike Gillis knows this, that they have no real proven players in the system. They've got Eddie Lack, who's played well, someone they signed this offseason from Europe, who never played a professional game in North America until this season, and then Tyler Wyman, who lost the job to Eddie Lack in the minors. So, there's been some talk, and interestingly enough, the Manitoba Moose signed a goalie to a professional tryout contract today, which got some, people worked up on the Twitterverse and these other places where people discuss these things throughout the day. They've got too much to lose to put it in the hands of a goalie that's coming in new if they trade for a reliable backup from someone else in a deal, the guy on the farm.
Yeah. The kid Hodgson, he's had a bit of a time with injuries. Are they going to look at him down the stretch, or is he a guy who might move in a deal?
I don't think he's going to be gone either. He's someone they've invested a lot of time with. There was so much written about this guy when he came here for his first camp, and he impressed, and they sent him back down, and then he had the back issues, and last year played, I think, 24 games total, and this year came in and had a good camp and played well down on the farm, and then got broken, fractured bones in his cheek and missed 6 weeks because of that, and then came up and played for a couple of weeks and got sent back down. And he's in a tough spot. He's playing 4.5 minutes, 5 minutes a night on a fourth line on a team that has a bunch of stars. I think some people look at the fact that, okay, you've got Henrik Sedin signed for three more years at center. You've got Ryan Kesler signed for five more years at center. And you've got Manny Malhotra signed for two more years at center. And I think that raises people's, where is the future for Cody Hodgson? They could very well move him to the wing. But I don't see them moving Cody without giving him a chance. And I just don't know what the market is for Cody. They could be, he hasn't had a chance to show what he could do in the NHL. So I really don't see there's a real good judge for his worth. And I can't see the Canucks taking anything less than what they think was their 10th overall pick in 2008.
Ian, the last time the Oilers played for anything that was, worthwhile, Rafi Torres was a big part of it. He's had a hell of a year for you guys.
Rafi's much like Rafi's career, and I like Rafi as a person and as a player. It's been a little, he went a couple of, I think it was 20 games or so without a goal, and he's had a couple here in the last bit, and he led the team in hits against Thursday against the Blues, and when he can be that pinball, and he's played with Manny Malhotra in Columbus. When he can be that pinball and that energy guy that's going in and is skating north and south, he can be a great, great player for them, because he creates so much space for guys like Manny and Yannick Hansen. They work the cycle so well. And, it's interesting. His best season was that year with the Oilers. And, I think that's what he was noted for. He had a lot of goals and was also creating things. And I think he sort of lost his way a little bit, but he got signed this year late into the free agency. He got signed for $1 million. He just had a baby. And, you know, he's one of these guys that, you know, is his career over. And this is a chance to prove it's not. Took less money to sign here to play with a winner. And I think as we get closer to the playoffs, I think his value will begin to show, and I think it's expected to show.
This is Nation Radio on Edmonton Sports Radio Team 1260. It's Alan Mitchell with Ian Walker from the Vancouver Sun. Ian, the defensemen are getting healthy now. Hamis is back. Ballard, Salo is healthy. Who's still injured on the blue line there?
You've got Kevin Bieksa, who has a fractured foot from blocking a shot. He's got at least 3 weeks to go. Alex Edler is out with a back issue. He had surgery a month ago and isn't expected back until April. But, you know, on the other side of that, this gave a shot for them to the Canucks to see Chris Tanev, who came up from the farm, was playing junior A hockey with the Markham Waxers 2 seasons ago.
Wow.
He was playing for the Rochester Institute of Technology last season. Had a growth spurt in grade 12 and grew a foot after almost giving up hockey. And he has shown in the 10 or 12 games he's played that this is a guy who can play at the NHL level. And I think if these injuries wouldn't have happened, they would never have got a look at this guy. And he's playing on the you know, the third unit with Aaron Rome, and has yet to really make one of those glaring mistakes that all rookies at that position are prone to make. So it's really, you look at this from an outside perspective and you see everything that's gone on with this team, and it just bodes so well for them to do well in the playoffs, because all these things that they've gone through have definitely allowed other people to step up, which they have in most cases, and at the same time shown that players can play in different positions and still get the job done. There's a lot of confidence around this team right now, and that's again why I don't see Mike Gillis, Lauren Henning, and Lawrence Gilman doing much, because the chemistry and things are going so well in that room.
You know, if only we'd applied ourselves by growing a foot in grade 12 instead of, you know, writing down the lyrics to Stairway to Heaven, you know, who knows where we'd be. According to Behind the Net, it looks like the Canucks are rolling Bieksa, Hamhuis, and Erhoff against the tough opposition. Erhoff really has been an amazing player for the Canucks since he got there.
Yeah, you know, he's someone who definitely has stepped up and you know, really, yeah, another one of these surprise signings from Europe who has exceeded expectations, and you know, again, his minutes were way up there for a while. The Canucks, as recently as 2 weeks ago, had three players in the lineup with a combined 15 NHL games in terms of defense, with Tanev, Lee Sweat, and also Jan Sove, as well as Evan Oberg. So there was a lot of pressure on him with these guys out and three rookies in the lineup. And he stood tall and has really shown his worth. And again, it's like sort of what I just said earlier. You know, if these challenges weren't made or available for these players, I think it just sets them up for this playoff run, which a lot of people here are expecting. If I'll be the first, you know, I won't be the first to say it, but if the Canucks don't make the Stanley Cup Finals this year, it will be a disappointment.
Everything is in place, though. If you look at the dominoes, even to the point, 2006 spring for the Oilers, I remember it like it was yesterday, the Oilers had some injuries up front, and there was an opportunity for Mark Pouliot to play, and then he got mono, and they had to figure out a stopgap really quickly, and they signed Rem Murray. And the Oilers ended up, you know, not having that strong, you know, extra player, because I think Rem Murray came from the Barry Fraser Mexican League at the time, so he wasn't really, you know, in shape for the NHL. He played as well as he could. But the Canucks have a strong AHL team, and that's going to be important because it's a long run through the Stanley Cup playoffs.
Yeah, there's a lot of players there, and there's a lot of forwards there that have played. And, you know, that fourth line has gone through 12 different players at one point or another, you know, starting with Guylain Desbiens, who broke his hand and then was sent down, Alex Bolduc, who was the center to start the season and then had a high ankle sprain, came back only to suffer a shoulder injury on a face-off, his third in the last 3 seasons. You know, Jeff Tambellini is a healthy scratch for this team right now. There's a lot of depth at the forward position. You know, that's not including Billy Sweat, Lee Sweat's brother, who came over from Chicago in a signed deal this summer, who has yet to get his NHL start. Jordan Schroeder, The player who was picked in the first round 1 year after Cody Hodgson has yet to make his NHL debut. So there's a great coach down there in Claude Noel, mm-hmm. who's really challenging these players to step up and want to leave the Manitoba New Moose, where there's a lot of coaches in that league who are so worried about their jobs that they want these players to stay with them in the AHL. Claude is challenging these players to want to leave Manitoba and get up here as soon as possible.
Mike Gillis inherited a pretty darn good unit there in Vancouver. There was a lot of talent there, but he really has upgraded it in some important positions, hasn't he?
Yeah, I think Mike Gillis has done a tremendous job. I think he came in and the way things happened with that, and again, I wasn't with the team at that time. I was covering the junior hockey, but my recollection of it, you know, there was Dave Nonis, who was part of the Brian Burke regime, and it sort of happened after that season. They fell out of the playoffs, and Dave was fired, and the Aquilinis brought in Mike Gillis, who was a virtual unknown in the general manager's fraternity, you know, with a former player agent, Marcus Naslund's agent, and came in and really... You know, what Mike has done, which I am most impressed with, is this team is on the leading and cutting edge in terms of things off the ice. You know, the Canucks have a mind room, and they have, you know, chefs that make them their suppers, you know, lunch, supper, and dinners, and for an eating routine. And they have these sleep monitors. The Canucks, you know, these West Coast teams, as you know, have some of the most toughest travel regimens and structures, and the sleep monitors and the sleep doctors tell them when they'll stay overnight at certain cities and when they'll fly in the morning or when they'll fly after games, and I really think he's made it a place where players want to come because all they have to do is play hockey, you know. And you talk to some players off the record and you hear about the places where they've come from, and it's not always like this, you know, and it's been the same thing in junior hockey. I can only relate it to the Vancouver Giants, who I covered for 10 years with Ron Toigo. That team was run like a minor league team. You know, it had a budget, it had an owner with endless purse strings. I came from Swift Current, where I was a reporter, and that team, you know, has 3,000 seats at this building, and more or less is a community-owned team, and just tries to break even every year, and doesn't have the wherewithal to compete with a Ron Toigo and some of these other rich owners, and you know, it's the same in the NHL, and I think that's the good thing about the juniors is players don't really have an option of where they want to go. They're drafted and that's where they play, and a lot of times they just want to play. In the NHL, once you turn 26 now, it's your call and where you want to take your career.
Right. Final question, Ian. Oh, by the way, where are you? I can read you on Twitter. I know I have, but what's the Twitter address?
The Twitter is at Walker Big Talker.
There you go. Why I couldn't remember that is beyond
me. That's all right. My wife named me that at our wedding, so it sort of stuck.
She knew at least she knew what she was getting into, so it's good.
Well, you know, I don't know if you know, but my wife is Biff Naked, and it was something that stuck because there was a lot of people and a lot of media at the wedding, and I sort of inherited it, and... Now I sort of, you know, it's one of those things. You can either run away from one of those nicknames or you can embrace it, and I've chosen to do the latter.
Well, there you go. You've done very well for a guy who wrote Stairway to Heaven for his... one final question from... I asked Jim Houston this question a week ago. Is this the best Canucks team they've ever had, in your opinion?
You know, I hope I have the right answer as Jim, because Jim I highly respect and has a lot of more experience than I do covering this team and watching this team. But, you know, I'd have to say yes. You know, I think there's never been the excitement. It started in training camp. You know, Alain Vigneault said he'd be going for runs in September, and there was a buzz around this team, and they hadn't played a game yet. So, yeah, I think with what the Sedin brothers are doing, what Ryan Kessler is doing, the goaltending they're getting from their backup and Roberto Luongo, if you take a look, their numbers are the exact same, goals against and save percentage. In terms of their depth, I think this is a team that was built to win the Stanley Cup. And for the first time in Vancouver history, you know, those other two teams that went to the Stanley Cup Finals sort of caught lightning in a bottle, you know, in 82 and in 94. This isn't the case tonight, this year for sure.
Ian, thanks so much.
Hey, I'm glad I got a hold of you. And again, I apologize for being tardy.
Don't even worry. Thanks, man. That's Ian Walker from the Vancouver Sun, who will join us again, I'm sure, as we count down to the draft and we follow the Vancouver Canucks through their what is probably going to be a very successful spring in the Stanley Cup playoffs. And I say that not begrudgingly, because they deserve it. Those Canucks fans have suffered through a lot over the years. This is Nation Radio and Edmonton's sports radio, Team 1260. One email, this comes from Wood Guy, a.k.a. Darcy. Alan, I don't understand why the Oilers would trade Smith for a D-man who is a prospect. Didn't the Oilers just spend 300 games on Smead? Why let someone else get the benefit of that experience in return for a player who needs 300 to get to where Smead is today? Seems no like a no-win situation if you trade Smead for a D prospect, unless that prospect bring tools that the Oilers need and Smead will never have. Well, here's my issue. If you keep Smead and you also have Peckham and Petrie, along with the more veteran Gilbert and Whitney, can Smead play in the 3-4? And I'm being vague here, because the 3-4 doesn't mean as much to me as it does to others, but can he play in the top four? Can he play a lot of even strength minutes? We know he can play on the PK. Can he be effective there? Ladislav Smead has, I know there's been a lot of growing pains, but it's time for him to step up. And I don't know whether that's happened this year. And I know it's been a lot of injuries and there hasn't been a veteran presence, but you have to look at somebody who didn't come through. It's either Foster or Vandermeer or Smead. And if Smead's the guy who has interest and you have Foster signed for next year, then maybe you move him. And you're right, they have endured all the growing pains with Ladislav Smead. Is he getting any better? That's the reason why you maybe look at trading him. Coming up, Brian Hayes from AM 640 in Toronto on Nation Radio.